From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Last week, lawmakers in the Utah House passed a bill that allows school districts in the state to drop sex education courses, to stop teaching human sexuality at all. For those schools that do want to keep the classes, according to the bill, they'll only be allowed to teach an abstinence-only course. It means no discussion about safe sex, about sexually transmitted disease, and no instruction about contraception. The bill's sponsor, Bill Wright, worries sex education courses are too permissive. Today in the program, we're talking about the bill and the issues it raises. Representative Wright will join us, among others. Is abstinence an effective method of teaching young people? And what are the implications of doing away with programs that speak frankly about sex? We invite you to join us after this news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Last week, Utah lawmakers in the House passed a bill that allows school districts in the state to drop out of sex education courses. For those schools that do want to keep the classes, according to the bill, they'll only be allowed to teach an abstinence-only course, which means no discussion about safe sex, no discussion about sexually transmitted disease, and no instruction about contraception. The bill's sponsor is Representative Bill Wright. He worries that sex education courses are too permissive, that they may actually be encouraging young people to experiment sexually. On the floor of the House last week, Wright said that educators need to be honest with young people that sex outside of marriage is, he said, devastating. Today in the program, we're talking about the bill and the issues that it raises. Representative Wright may or may not be able to join us this morning. Apparently, they've just called a vote. No, it looks like we do have him, so I'll just move on with this. The questions we're asking, we're hoping to hear from you today. Is abstinence an effective method of teaching young people? What are the implications of doing away with programs that speak frankly about sex? You can join us 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Republican Bill Wright represents Utah's House District 68 from Holden, Utah. He's the sponsor of this bill we're talking about. It's House Bill 363, and Representative Wright is joining us today by phone from the Capitol. Representative, good of you to join us. Thanks very much for being with us.
Okay, thank you very much.
Would you explain first, if you don't mind, what exactly was the problem that you saw that you wanted to solve with this bill? What's the problem?
This isn't the first time this has raised over the last for quite some time. The problem we have is we have public schools, and we have what we call compulsory education. That gives us, as legislators, elevates our responsibility to make sure that information delivered, whether it be in any topic to our students, is appropriate, and basically be intellectually honest and make sure it's true and actually fact. We don't need a bunch of perceptions. I come upon this when I seen some curriculum that was for 9-year-olds in our public schools. The curriculum was developed and promoted by Planned Parenthood throughout this country and probably internationally and everywhere else. That curriculum, they had an unwanted endorsement on there from the Utah State Office of Education. When I talked to them, they said they had not given that endorsement, but yet we got a private organization promoting their products and their philosophy that has basically become part of our public school curriculum.
What was the thing you saw, Representative? What was on the slideshow that you saw that bothered you?
Well, there's lots of things. Basically, encouraging promiscuous behavior, and it had a bunch of links. It wasn't a slideshow. It basically had links to other activities, sexual activities, and others that for a 9-year-old would be deemed inappropriate, that a 9-year-old shouldn't be exposed to.
Do you mind being a little bit more specific, Representative? When you say it encouraged permissive behavior, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, I do mind being a little more prescriptive because I don't think a lot of the things that I would describe should be something that, you know, that should be mentioned over radio.
Okay, so it was so bad that you can't even talk about it over the radio.
Well, it's bad enough that I feel uncomfortable, yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. I wondered, the argument is made, of course, for people that are advocates of abstinence-only programs, that in Utah, for example, that Utah has some of the lowest rates for teen pregnancy, for example, and for sexually transmitted disease. So what's the problem? If Utah's already seems to be, in terms of if you compare it against the rest of the country, in fairly well standing there, what is the problem that you're trying to address?
Well, I don't know if you can find a particular problem other than those rates would increase if we continue to promote sexuality in teenagers.
Yeah. Is this a morality question as much as a practical question for you?
You can actually talk both sides. I mean, obviously, our country was founded on Christian virtues. And also, many, of course, may be opposed to that. But that's reality. That's what our country was founded on. Many of the founders indicated that the lack of virtue would, at some point in time, would be a problem for our country. You can also go on the other side, economic development. The largest indicator of poverty in this country today is single-parent families. So when you don't have fidelity after marriage, you can say it's a moral question, but it becomes a great big giant economic question that you can measure, and you can measure by dollars and poverty within our country. And, you know, I think we're all pretty much in unison working against poverty. This is one of the things. We would be a less impoverished nation if everybody lived in families, had parents to take care of them, had two parents, and we'd be less impoverished. That's a fact. That's a matter of fact. So you can talk on either side. I think it's a combination.
One of your colleagues, Representative Brian King, who's a Democrat, has said that some students, whether you like it or not, whether it's responsible or not, whether it's moral or not, some students are just going to have sex before marriage despite their parents' wishes, and that programs like this that teach just abstinence are a little naive, that it's going to happen. It's a drive. Whether it's good or not, it's going to happen. How do you respond to that?
Well, isn't that the best? I think that's probably the best argument we have, that we don't need to be taught about sex to have sex. It is a drive. Guess what? It's the most natural thing we have, and it is going to happen. So why not teach how to control it? Why not teach abstinence? If we do not teach abstinence, we have people. Because it's a natural thing. Everybody already knows about it. Everybody understands how to do it. If we don't teach some form of discipline, we have a percentage of our society that grows up and will never, ever, ever recognize that abstinence might be an option for them, just to say no. Abstinence programs that go in many, many high schools, particularly those schools that have youth programs in that have had youth that are in custody or something, you know, these youth are 18 or 19 years old, and they're overwhelmed to think that, well, nobody's ever told me about this. Nobody's ever told me that you can actually date and not have a relationship. That's a really novel idea, because I've watched TV, I've watched my neighbors, I watch everything else, and I've actually never heard about it. So wouldn't it be good that we could maybe at least present an idea to them that maybe there is a way for two people to have a good relationship and be able to enjoy each other's company and show love and be able to get along and be able to develop a life together, or at least an opportunity to date and not have to do those things.
Okay, so you've got that part of it, Representative. You've got the idea of talking about responsibility and affection and that component of it. But then there's the nuts and bolts part of sex education. Where are young people supposed to learn that?
Well, you just indicated that it's such a natural thing. Everybody knows that. I'm not sure until you're married you need to learn about that.
Kids need no sex education at all.
There is some nuts and bolts about it, but you know, I guess I'm confused with Brian King's statement that it's going to happen whether you like it or not because everybody knows about it. And then we come back and say, well, are we saying we don't know about it, that it's not going to happen unless we teach about it? I guess I'm a little confused on what you're wanting for my answer.
Well, I guess my question is, maybe it's clear. What you're suggesting is because it's such a powerful drive, people will have sex anyway. That's going to happen. So they don't need any education about it whatsoever in school. beyond the abstinence only?
Yeah, they need to know how to govern their emotions. They need to know that when the appropriate time and place for sex is. And I think we'd all agree the appropriate time and place is after we're married.
If I have this right, Representative, you have 10 kids.
I do, yeah.
Do you mind me asking, what kind of sex education did you provide in the home for you? You don't have to be explicit here, but did you and your wife talk to your kids about sex, if you know what I mean?
I talked to my kids about the powerful motivating source within men and women, and it's about the powerful appetite that it is. And like many other things in life, inappropriate behaviors can become addictive, the same as drugs, alcohol, tobacco, a variety of other stuff. And I talked to him about, having an independence within ourselves and being able to govern ourselves, about everything that feels good don't always lead to something long-term good or relationship. I talked to him about the gratification and selfishness that we would have in our society today does not lead to long-lasting happiness. And it isn't only applicable here, it's applicable in everything we do. The great excitement we might feel, the immediate for gratification, the selfish nature that we are. When we get involved in that, we tend to forget others. That's one of the things. We are so infatuated with sex in our society today, we're so infatuated with our personal gratification, we tend to forget about everybody else. It would be much better for us to be able to discipline ourselves and focus on those who may be in need and focus on others rather than all about me and all about what I need right now. That's the way I taught them.
Mm. Let me ask you this, Representative, finally. What would you be comfortable with in a public school classroom, young people talking about in terms of contraceptives? Should that discussion come up at all, or sexually transmitted disease? I mean, what kind of format, I suppose, would you be comfortable with that conversation taking place?
Well, we should talk about sexually transmitted diseases, and we're allowed to do that. I'll tell you what specifically in the bill. We can talk about sexually transferred and the diseases. We can talk about the result of some sexual relationship. We don't have to tell you how to have the sexual relationship, how to avoid them. We just talk about this is a result of a sexual relationship that's not appropriate. Teachers are allowed to take a discussion. They're not allowed to advocate. It shouldn't be in part of the curriculum. And, you know, the question, I guess, that was interesting to me, the discovery, I guess, that people in our society when you talk about abstinence only, the question, well, what do we teach? There's nothing to teach. Well, I think we'll discover there's lots of things to teach about relationships that don't involve sex. Sex is just one of the very small things in a relationship with people, with marriages and other things. There's lots of other things that's important in a relationship. If a student wants to ask a question or needs further discussion, teacher has the ability to do that, but that discussion, one student in a class of 20 or 30 shouldn't be able to drive that discussion on the other 20 that really don't want to hear about it. But a student has an opportunity to ask a teacher questions, and with the purview of state law, we have other state laws that governs what teachers and entrusted individuals in a school can do or can't do. Why, they can explain those questions and those answers to satisfy that student.
Do you feel good about your prospects for the bill in the Senate?
You know, I don't know. I haven't. You know, I'm not one that really measures everything. I think that it's a good concept, and if we have enough good people that can understand, it'll have good prospects. I haven't myself went and measured and who or what or who would support it or who would not. I haven't done that.
You're not counting votes, then?
I'm not counting votes. No. I don't count votes.
Okay. Representative, we're glad you could join us. Thanks so much.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Joining us now on the line is Gail Ruzicka. She's the president of the Utah Eagle Forum. It's a conservative organization in the state which supports a move to abstinence-only education. She's at the Capitol this morning, is joining us by phone there, probably on a cell phone. Gail Ruzicka, are you on a cell phone?
I am on a cell phone.
Okay.
That's right.
Sounds fine. Thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.
Let me begin by asking, I want to begin with the same question I ask of Representative Wright. What's the problem you're trying to solve?
Well, you know, in Utah right now, we have what's called abstinence based or abstinence plus. And that's our law, though it also allows some of the district or any district who wants to teach abstinence only. And we have four districts right now who actually opted into that and teach abstinence only. And if you look at the numbers, first of all, if you look at the data, Utah is amazing in our numbers. We are way down in the comparison of the states. If you look at, you know, the CDC, and as they put together this comparison, shows that Utah is number 50. We are the lowest among all the states and gone. Area. We're number 48 in chlamydia and 43 in unmarried teen pregnancies. And we're so low in abortion that makes us a little higher in the unmarried teen pregnancies because we don't have as many abortions as they do in other states. So if you look at Utah numbers, we have such low numbers. Then if you look at
before you move on, but that begs the question. Or raises the question anyway. I always use that wrong. That raises the question of then what's the problem if you've got these low rates?
That's what I was going to explain to you.
Okay.
That the districts, the four districts that have abstinence only, have even lower numbers than the other districts. So part of what brings our numbers down is the abstinence only, according to our health department here in the state of Utah. As they go out and they go county by county, those districts, if you look at the counties that's in the districts that have abstinence only, we have even lower numbers. The legislators have looked at that and said, well, you know, how come we're lower in these areas? Well, those are the abstinence only districts. Because, you know, we don't send a mixed message when we teach abstinence only. You know, with drugs, we say, just say no to drugs. And we don't then go on to teach how to use drugs safely. We say, no, say no to drugs. There's no such thing as safe drug use. Well, it's the same thing with we just say no to sex. That you know, while you are a teenager and you're in school, you just say no to sex. And you don't and turn around then and say, but we know we can't trust you and we know that you are going to have sex. Therefore, here's the various ways to protect yourself. That sends a mixed message that just doesn't work. And it's not just our Utah studies that show that. And as I pointed out, these numbers are national numbers. But the University of Pennsylvania did a study that just came out a year or so ago that was kind of, well, I guess 2 years ago now, that kind of just hit everybody. You know, they all of a sudden they said, wow, we have never had this happen before. It was the first study that they really did on abstinence only and discovered that the abstinence only, and they compared abstinence only, and they did another one called safer sex intervention, and then they had comprehensive sex intervention. And at the end of that study, it was of 662 high risk, and these are high risk students, by the way, from the ages of from 10 to 15, low income urban schools. They discovered that the abstinence only is what worked. They prolonged their sexual involvement like 2 years longer. It was an incredible study that shows that abstinence only is what works. Now, when we say abstinence only, we don't just end it there. What we're going to do is teach the young people the skills, the necessary skills to just say no. And so it is a course. So they're not going to just start out by saying, well, the abstinence only, well, we're done today. We're done with this. No, it will be the course that then goes on to teach them about the reasons for waiting and the skills and how to wait and the rewards for waiting and the understanding of the harm and the damage done if you don't wait. You know, you don't just end up with diseases and pregnancy. You end up with broken hearts. And, you know, here in the state of Utah, you know, we talk about, this is an epidemic. Well, in Utah, only one out of 100 in teenagers have an STD. Now, we would like to cut that and have that even be less. So that's why abstinence only, because we know it works and we know it works best, and we don't want to send a mixed message.
Okay, let me ask you. So when you say mixed message, you're referring to what you figure is going on in sex education courses that aren't just abstinence only. What exactly is it that bothers you about a conversation to young people about the existence of contraception, about the possibility about a sexually transmitted disease? I got a sense from Representative Wright that they were almost teaching permissive behavior just by bringing the subject up. I get a sense you feel that way as well.
Well, if they teach contraception, and we last year they put together this slide program, the State Office of Education did, about contraception, and that was falling under the category of what we have right now, and this slide presentation went through all the various types of contraception that you could use, basically told you where to get it and how to get it, and even gave you the brands, the different brands of the different kind of contraception. Now, how does that make sense to teach that the best thing to do is to practice abstinence and say, and then have more slides and spend more time on contraception and how to get it and how it works and why you want it? Now, that would be like teaching about drugs and saying, well, you know, marijuana is not as bad as heroin, but if you are going to use heroin, here's the various places you can get needles, because you're going to want clean needles, and then here's the different kinds of heroin. You know, we would never do that. But we do that with sex education. And for families that want more, for parents who want their children to be taught more, we have so many programs in this state. We have federally funded programs throughout the state where families can take their children and sit with them and go through it with them, or they can go online. All these things are online. Planned Parenthood, you can go online to Planned Parenthood and learn everything that you want to. So why should we use the schools where the children go to school, trusting the teachers, and then send mixed messages from these same teachers that they trust? It's not like that all this other isn't available. And parents, they know their child. They know each individual child. They know how old, at what age the child is ready for what, and then how much information they want their child to have.
Gail Rosita, let me jump in and ask you a question. I wanted to ask you about a study that was done. It was a report that came from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's Pregnancy Risk system. And they were analyzing what young Utah teens knew or didn't know about contraceptions. Particularly, they were asking teens who had gotten pregnant. And one of the things they found, Utah teens, according to this, to the study, they're more likely than other teens to say that they didn't know where to get birth control. They thought they couldn't get pregnant at the time. They believed that they or their partner was sterile. Data that suggests they didn't know some basics about the facts of life. Now, where are young people supposed to get that information? You said on websites like Planned Parenthood, those kinds of things, but it's inappropriate for them to get that at school. Is that what you're saying?
Well, you know, as far as learning about the body and reproduction, they learn that at school and they learn it in health. There's nothing that they can teach about reproduction in health classes. They taught that when I was in school, and I'm an old person. So when these children say, well, they didn't know that, it was because they weren't paying attention and in school, because they do teach that in school. And in fact, you know, they're talking about the survey that was based on pregnant teens right here in the state of Utah, yeah, where they're teaching it right now in the schools. And so if they don't know those things, it's because they're not paying attention in school, because they're already teaching them in the schools, and it didn't do anything to help them, apparently. But if they're taking health, which is required, then they're learning it. And if they're taking, unless their parents opted them out of sex education or didn't opt them in, then they also learned that at school, too. But even if they never took the sex education class, even if their parents decided not to opt in to have them take sex education, they did get reproductive health. So it's hard to understand how they could take reproductive health and not know about the body and how the body works and about how babies are made.
Right.
And,
let me ask you.
And so that information, they have been taught that information.
Let me ask you this.
You know, children don't always listen.
Yeah. Okay. Let me ask you this finally. So under current law, you were sort of referring to this, parents can opt out of sex education programs, that, you know,
they have to opt in.
That's right. So they have a choice. So why not leave it for those parents who want their children to have this kind of education to have it? Let them, if they opt in, it's their choice. This is what a parent wants. What's wrong with that?
Well, first of all, that's not the appropriate place for the school. You know, there's lots of things to be learning at school.
But Gail Ziga, but that may
so,
be.
So
but
they can have a.
But wait. Says, okay. Says who? That's not the appropriate place. If the parent thinks that's the appropriate place, shouldn't be up to the parent. If they can opt in, they're making the choice for their own children. They have the right as a parent. And you're big on parents' rights. So why shouldn't a parent be able to, if they opt in, they make that call? Why can't they make the call as to whether or not it's the proper place for school?
Well, first of all, again, schools aren't there to teach everything that parents want their children to be taught. I mean, I've spent a lot of money on lessons over the years. The schools did not give my children. It was up to me, to be my responsibility for me as a parent to pay for the lessons and other things. So it's not just because the schools are there, it does not mean that they have the responsibility and obligation to teach everything that parents want their children to be taught. We are saying with this abstinence only, it's a basic program, one that parents still have to opt in. It's not, I mean, just because it's abstinence only doesn't mean that parents aren't totally involved. In fact, speaking of parental rights, in this particular piece of legislation, it actually requires that parents are involved in serving on the committee that puts together the curriculum for abstinence only, and then it also requires that there is a parental component to this that parents can use themselves and teach their children if
right.
they want to.
Right.
And so we're offering a lot for parents. Anything beyond that, it's
but
it's
you're not offering
and paid
but,
for in the community.
But you're
so the
not offering.
The government is already paying for this.
But Gail Ruzicki, you're not offering parents who want their children to be educated with a sex education program that is not abstinence only.
That's not the school's responsibility.
Says who?
The school's responsibility to pay to give my children all the lessons that we wanted the children to have over the years.
Says who?
It's not.
Says who?
I guess the legislators up here who are the ones who say here's where the money goes.
Okay, that's right. I guess that's right. I suppose what I'm saying is, shouldn't that be up to the parent? You're saying that's not a proper place for it, and we are out of time. So, Gail Ruzicki, we're glad you could join us. Thanks very much.
Well, glad to be on. Thank you so much.
801-585-WEST, the number to join the conversation. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Lots of people who want to join the conversation. In fact, you know, I'm supposed to take a break, but let me get a few phone calls out of the way before we do. Chris, you're in Ogden. Welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Doug.
Go ahead.
I'm really perturbed that the state of Utah thinks this is a good idea. Like it's been mentioned, our numbers are low enough as is. We're clearly doing something right. I really don't think that abstinence-only sex ed is going to solve any problems. I think it's going to create more problems. And on our previous guest comment about we don't teach students where to get drugs, drugs are illegal, whereas sex is natural, Doug. It's something that everyone does. It's something that happens. It's not something we should sweep under the rug.
Okay. Chris, I'm glad you called. Thanks very much. And we're having a lot of people reflecting Chris's comments as well here. Mark is with us in Salt Lake. Mark, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Doug.
Sure.
Hey, children don't always listen. That's true. But as if adults do. Hey, the just say no part of that, like he's saying, drugs are illegal and sex is not. And it sounds to me like maybe we've got lots of people in this state that would just rather make sex illegal for people under the age of 18. And then she also made the comment that, you know, if people wait, they don't end up with broken hearts. And I would dispute that. I think lots of people who stay virgins and then get married wind up with broken homes and broken hearts. And some of the stuff she says is just, it's so out there. But thanks. I'll take your reply off the air.
Thanks very much. Okay. I don't have a reply, but the others will as we move into a break here in just a moment. Let me get Elizabeth on the line from Salt Lake. Elizabeth, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Doug. I appreciate you taking my call.
Sure.
My biggest concern with the abstinence-only legislation that they're trying to put forth is these children, these teenagers and preteens that are going to be taught sex education need to be able to look at the pros and negatives of having premarital sex or sex outside of marriage or teenage sex, and they've got to be able to learn to make the right decision. So if they're given all the information up front, this is what could happen if you do this, instead of just saying, no, you can't do it, I think that children, these teenagers, are going to make the right decisions. They've got to be able to learn to cope as adults, and I think this is a valuable lesson for them to learn. Thank you very much.
Glad you called. Thanks. 801-585-WEST, the number to join the conversation. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We need to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about a controversial bill on Utah's Capitol Hill that would do away with most versions of sex education in this state, would mandate, in fact, that if schools – well, would let schools opt out of sex education. Those that want to stay in a sort of sex education program would have to teach abstinence only. It passed in the House last week, appears to be on track to pass in the Senate as well. We're talking about the bill. 801-585-WEST, the number to join us. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Democrats Carol Spackman-Moss represents Holliday's District 37 in the State House. She, of course, voted against the bill. All the Democrats did in the House, and she's joining us on the line this morning. Carol Spackman-Moss, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Doug.
Carrie Galloway is also with us in the studio, CEO of the Planned Parenthood Association of Utah. And Carrie Galloway, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for doing the topic, Doug.
Okay, Carol Spackman-Moss, Representative Moss, let me ask you what you are hearing then from Representative Wright. The question was, what is the problem they're trying to address? Do you think you understand that?
I think I do, and I think that the problem, as he describes it, came from a very small group of people. Mrs. Ruzicka perhaps represents that group and some others that have been up here lobbying, including a lot of homeschoolers, who saw that Planned Parenthood, there was a link on the State Office of Education's website with Planned Parenthood's maturation program, and I think that just made everybody go crazy in that group, and they thought that they had to take this radical step to prevent anything other than what they wanted, which was abstinence only, to be taught. And I think in listening to her just before the break, I think she represents a small number of people. I don't just represent my own views. I had dozens and dozens of emails opposed to this bill, and I base my decision on over 30 years of teaching teenagers, and knowing that it is that if you give students, kids, information and educate them on any topic, particularly one where their own health and future is at stake, that you are arming them with the ability to make good decisions. Like when I say to my grandson, he says, "Why do I have to wear a helmet when I ride my bike?" And I said, "It isn't enough to say, because you do." You say, "Because if you fell and hit your head on the hard ground and get a concussion or get brain damage, it will ruin your life forever." I mean, that you give kids a reason to make a good choice. And what this bill would do would take away the other side to convince them that abstinence is the proper course for them to follow when they're still in their teens.
Carrie Galloway, what – I'm not sure if there are very many conventional sex education courses being taught in public schools in this state that don't include – I mean, they're abstinence plus. You know, it mm-hmm. has that measure in it anyway. But take that part out. What are young people in those kinds of programs being taught that is so disturbing to people like Representative Wright?
Well, they're being taught that at some point there's a decision for them to make. And to make good decisions, we know we have to practice those decisions. We have to process the information. And just being told, no, you can't do it. Hey, it might be good, and maybe at some point in your life you can do it when you're married. But with anything in our culture that uses sex, and then they're told no, and they're not allowed to process that information, kids don't make good decisions. Hey, adults don't make great decisions. And just say no doesn't work. All studies say that a combination of promoting abstinence but giving kids the information behind that is what makes a successful sex ed program.
What are the implications? Carrie Galloway, I'll start with you. But what are the implications for doing away with these kinds of programs?
Well, first off, a few people on Capitol Hill get to take away local decision-making. Local decision-making by locally elected school boards into what works best for their communities. Four districts have decided abstinence only, but the rest of the districts have abstinence-based education. And that allows parents, school experts, to decide what works best.
Now, beyond the idea of them not having choice, can you measure what the implications may be without this kind of information for
young
people?
Well, I think I can. And I used to have students tell me, and among themselves, make jokes about how their teachers had to dance around this topic when they were teaching this in their health classes. I mean, the kids just giggled about it because they knew so much more. They knew the teacher was prevented by law from saying. In other words, the danger to kids is they get this information in the wrong places. They share misinformation among themselves. They get misinformation from whoever, you know, whether they're watching through the media or whatever, the idea that it's sexy and everything's sexy and, you know, to have an affair is not a big deal. I mean, that is not where we want them to get the information to make good choices. I mean, I don't think any parent would really want their child to be sexually active. I mean, they all prefer them to be abstinent, but they want them to have the information so they know what impact those decisions can make.
I completely agree. You discussed earlier about the CDC study.
Yeah.
And teens, 25% believed that they or their partner were sterile. If kids don't have the opportunity to talk about sexuality, sure, maybe in fifth grade, they got an anatomy lesson, and in 10th grade, they got another one. But let's say they have sex and they don't get pregnant. Maybe they're sterile. You know, if you don't allow people to process information in an educational setting with people who know what's right and wrong, both morally and in reality, physiologically, you know, kids don't learn to be good decision makers. And I feel that in abstinence only, when I listen to Representative Wright say to kids, you need to wait, and that's just it. That's all. That leaves no room for them to even imagine or figure out how to work through situations of someone pressuring them to have sex or someone making a really good story, but they've just told they can't. You know, it's not how we teach young people to become solid adults.
Doug, I quoted from the National Abstinence Education Association when I tried to amend the bill to say abstinence-centered, or some call it abstinence-based, and even they say you can't teach abstinence only. You have to teach there are other alternatives to preventing pregnancy, but they're not contraception, but they're not fail-proof. So, in other words, you have to teach both sides in order to show them which is the better.
There was a federally funded study that I want to ask you both about. That you hear abstinence-only advocates referring to this study. This was a federally funded University of Pennsylvania study. It was published in the Archives of Pediatrics and Adolescent Medicine, and it found that only one-third of 6th and 7th graders who completed abstinence-focused programs had sex within the next 2 years, compared to nearly half of the students who attended the other kinds of classes, including ones that taught combined abstinence and contraception. Which was to say, wow, you know, that those one-third of them, only one-third had sex within the next 2 years. Two-thirds didn't. Mm-hmm.
I suspect there are other factors.
Well, Carrie Gow, I want to ask you about this because you're having critics who say, look, it was that particular study was not representative of the abstinence kinds of programs that people will get, certainly those in Utah that had the kind of moralistic tone that encouraged young people to delay sex, that didn't portray extramarital sex as inappropriate, that didn't disparage contraceptives, those kinds of things.
Exactly. They had those rules. Representative right would not like those rules. I look at a study that has been the first large-scale look at sex education provided in public schools with the abstinence from the University of Georgia. And it clearly states that abstinence-only states have higher teenage pregnancy rates. The four states that have the lowest teenage pregnancy rates do comprehensive. We have to deal with numbers as they are. You'll find a study that can prove anything you want. The reality is that we need to let our parents, which Gail Ruzicka, as was said earlier, she believes that parents should be the deciders, except when they don't agree with what she believes in. And this is a case that she knows more than the parents know.
I think they ought to do a study between urban, suburban school districts and high schools and some of the rural, because I know from my high school, there were very few, maybe one or two, if that, every year, girls getting pregnant. Because I asked counselors when this subject came up a few years ago, and I heard stories from people in school districts in rural areas of Utah that they were double, triple the numbers. And so what is it? Which parents are giving more information? Which schools are giving more information? I mean, some teachers in very conservative areas are afraid to teach much of anything.
Let me take another few phone calls. Maddie is joining us in Lehi, Utah. Maddie, welcome.
Thank you.
Sure.
I'm actually on my way to my fifth grade daughter's maturation lesson, which starts at 12:15 and I'm told ends at 1:15. And I just can't believe it's only 1 hour. And, you know, we'll teach her at home, but I just think that they need education from all fronts to help them make decisions. And they will need to make these decisions. Life happens. So I just can't believe what's going on right now in the state of Utah.
Glad you called. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Let's take a call from Jared in Orem, Utah. Jared, welcome.
Thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, I'm a conservative. I'm a member of the dominant religion in the state, and I actually homeschool our kids as well.
Wow.
And I'm completely opposed to this bill. I think it would be great in a perfect world if every parent, you know, took the reins and really taught their kids accurate, complete information about sex so they could make informed decisions. But it's not the case. There are many, many, many parents who don't. And that, with this being such a strong biological drive in everyone, there's real cost to our society of people not having full information. And I just think it's a terrible idea to switch to this this abstinence-only thing. These kids need somewhere they can get reliable information when they don't have other sources.
Okay. Jared, glad you called. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
If you have a contrary opinion, by the way, you can join us as well. We're getting, a lot of comments of both calls and emails that are against the bill. We certainly invite those of you who are for it to join us as well. Let me ask Representative Spackman-Moss, I want to know about what do you figure the prospects are for the bill in the Senate. You had a number of Republicans who voted against it. What are its chances, do you figure?
Well, I'm very, very concerned that it will pass the Senate. And the sad part, Doug, is I don't think all those votes in the House that voted for it, really, those individuals really, truly believe it, because privately some of them have acknowledged to me and others that they're more concerned about delegates at their caucus and how they might come after them on that, but they really believe what we're saying. And, you know, it seems like this is an example of the tyranny of the minority over the majority. I just wish that enough people could come out, their voices come up here and present the other side, because the minority that has so much influence on that, they're here every day, a small group of people, and they just work people constantly until they get them to their side. And I really think this is, the general public is completely opposed to this. And I mean, your comments from your listeners are absolutely right on. I mean, I really think they're very telling. You're not getting a lot of calls saying this is a great bill.
Democrat Carol Speckman-Moss represents Holliday's District 37. Thank you very much, Representative, for joining
us. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Carrie Galloway is with us. Stay with us, if you would. CEO of Planned Parenthood Association of Utah. We're going to talk more about the politics of all of this when we get back from a break. 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Back in a moment. This is Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're exploring a bill making its way through the Utah legislature that would allow public schools to stop teaching sex education entirely. And those schools that do want to keep their sex ed programs would only be allowed to teach an abstinence-only course. 801-585-WEST, the number to join us. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. I want to bring a voice in here to give us some perspective. Alicia Doan is joining us, an associate professor of political science at the University of Kansas. She's the co-author of the book, The Politics of Virginity, Abstinence in Sex Education, joining us from Kansas Public Radio in Lawrence, Kansas. And Professor Doan, welcome. Thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
What are you hearing in this conversation so far? I'm particularly interested in the comment of Representative Carol Speckman-Moss, in that just before the break she was talking about how some of the lawmakers were really afraid about that issue when they go to caucuses. I guess it gives you a sense of just how political this particular issue of morality is now.
Yes, absolutely. I think that her comment was very insightful. And what I'm hearing in the conversation is really what I would consider morality politics. And morality politics and policy disputes are different than sort of your run-of-the-mill policy disputes, where the core of the issue is really a fight over morality and who has the legitimacy to legislate and say whose morality should have supremacy over the others.
So it's interesting. I mean, you heard this from Representative Wright talking about, when I asked him if this was a practical thing or a moral thing, and he said, well, it's a little bit of both. But it's interesting. It seems like the practical concerns aren't as big for them as the moral ones. Are you seeing that in these kinds of debates that go on around the country?
Absolutely. And one of the things that makes this type of policy discussion so conflictual is that the bottom line is really a fight and an argument over moral views, not necessarily the reality of the situation. And when we look at certain things nationwide in terms of the number of teen pregnancies, the number of teen births, the number of teen abortions, those have all been trending downward. And so on the one hand, we have this reality that's kind of running against the perception of a problem. And the perception is one of teenagers and sexuality amok and completely out of control and something that needs to be done, something that the state needs to be addressing immediately, even though, like I said, the reality of it doesn't necessarily match up with the perception of it.
There are so many studies here. I mentioned one that you hear from abstinence-only advocates from the University of Pennsylvania. But you've written about the role evidence plays in these conflicts. And you say there's this trend occurring in the debate where there's this attempt to find scientific corroboration for these kinds of ideas. Does that University of Pennsylvania study sort of fit in there?
The University of Pennsylvania study, offhand, I would say, is a little bit different. But absolutely, there is, and we see this in a lot of morality debates, particularly around abstinence-only education. We've also seen this in the conflict over abortion, which is trying to legitimize one side by kind of relying on scientific evidence. And one of the issues also is that the scientific evidence, not all studies are created the same. And so some of the studies are not very legitimate. This one from the University of Pennsylvania, that's a different category than some of the other studies that I have seen that supposedly support abstinence-only education and really wouldn't stand up to what we would consider in academics a scientific standard.
We have Carrie Galloway here from Utah's Planned Parenthood Association. I'm wondering, the Planned Parenthood seems like such the sort of watchword now these days in political in politics. It's certainly playing out in the Republican presidential campaign. Talk about that. Just the role of the Planned Parenthood in terms of the sort of the politics of all of this.
Well, Planned Parenthood as an organization has certainly been politically beat up as of late, and the reality is that Planned Parenthood has been integral part of reproductive health in the United States for decades and decades. One of the things that's happened is over the years, there has been more and more attacks on Planned Parenthood, largely coming from the anti-abortion movement. And while some of that criticism, say 10 years ago, 20 years ago, wasn't really seen as kind of a central issue in the anti-abortion debate, it's what I like to call radical incrementalism, where over time, something, an idea such as contraception being really controversial 20 years ago wouldn't have gotten much attention or much play. Sticking with that message over time and really demonizing contraception and demonizing Planned Parenthood in particular for delivering those types of services has started to take root. And we're seeing that across the nation. And again, the perception versus the reality are quite different. Most American women, over 90% of sexually active women, use contraception. And that's regardless of whether they're Catholics, regardless of religion. So at least for women and for men and for people who are trying to plan their families, contraception is not controversial. But in politics, it has become.
It's Alicia Doan. She is an associate professor of political science at the University of Kansas. Thank you very much for joining us. Carrie Galloway, you think the bill? Sorry about that. Carrie Galloway, will the bill pass?
I'm worried. If it gets to the floor in the Senate, it could pass and Utah will have to live with it.
Thanks for joining us. Radio West, a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.